don't want to see you coming back in here with dirty jerseys. I want to see you coming back in here with bloodstained jerseys.
Look at anybody going sitting up a pint with those boys after that.
And the referee is looking around and acting as Mickey.
Tell the children to play tennis or something.
If they want to play tennis, go and play tennis.
Full-time whistle and Carlow are the Joe McDonagh Cup champions. Well done to Colin Bonner. Well done to the Carlow team. To a man, they've been outstanding all year. James Carroll, we'll mention, a sub-goalkeeper, Conor Foley, Dion Wall, Owen Redmond, Jerry Cody, Jack Murphy got a run, Peter Abbey, Richard Kelly, Ross Smithers, Seamus Murphy, Teddy Joyce, they were the subs. But this has been a day for Carlow. It's been a great year for Carlow. They've been promoted to Division 1 in hurling. They'll play Waterford and Galway in the league, along with the other teams in 1B. But 226 to 124 is no mean achievement in Croke Park on any given day. The Joe McDonagh Cup is up, where the famous Joe McDonagh sang that great song years ago. This is a great day for Carlow to look down at those.
So there you go. Carlow have risen to such a height that not even Brendan Hennessy of KCLR is completely losing his shit when Carlow hurlers win the Joe McDonagh Cup in Croke Park against Westmeath. Welcome along to the so-called Weaker Podcast on Bolts.ie. Gavin Cooney presenting alongside Morris Brosnan and Mick McCarthy.
How's it going, folks?
Not too bad, Mick. You all right?
Not too bad, Gavin. Yeah, yourself?
Not too
bad. We've swapped chairs.
Yeah, it's the insult added to the injury that was your weekend. I kind of want to get into this in a second.
Okay.
Before we take your time. Coming up, we're going to speak to the Kildare hurling captain Brian Byrne about the lesser known of Kildare's stances against the GAA last week. Their hurlers released a joint statement with the Antrim hurlers 2 days before the McDonagh Ring Cup promotion relegation playoff. My God, that's a mouthful. Last Saturday afternoon, the game went ahead, but we have not heard the end of this saga, as you're going to hear later on when we chat to Brian Byrne. I will also be taking a trip around the counties hurling-wise. On Sunday, there was the Leinster hurling final in Croke Park, the Munster hurling final in Thurles, and obviously the Joe McDonagh Cup in Croke Park as well. Each of us was at one of the games, which is...
Yeah. Which is bizarre, considering one of them was a double header.
Yeah.
But it is true that each of you were at one of the games.
But the game that you went to, Mick, was the Munster final.
It was.
It was a bit of an odyssey.
Yeah, a little bit of an odyssey. I'll talk again later on, I think, a little bit about why I kind of want to have a chat about Clare almost being a weaker county due to our Munster final lack of success, I suppose, over the years. But getting there wasn't the easiest thing in the world. I had a lovely weekend planned where myself and my wife were celebrating her birthday by going to a nice hotel, the Horse and Jockey Hotel, just outside Thurles, in Horse and Jockey, actually, okay, in Tipperary. Nice. So kill the journey on the Sunday, right? That's the idea here. So we have a Saturday night in a hotel, Leisure Centre Spa, all the rest, you know, dinner out, breakfast next morning. About 9 o'clock, my face just dropped and I started kind of maniacally laughing.
Okay. This is 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning or the night?
Evening. Okay. Yeah. It was probably a little bit later. It was about maybe a half an hour after the World Cup game ended, Uruguay and Portugal. And we're kind of deciding whether to kind of like take it easy or go to the bar for a few drinks. And I just started maniacally laughing. And it was like, what's so funny? And I'm like, it's not funny. Nothing's funny. I had, in fact, forgotten my Munster final tickets, as well as my father and sister's Munster final tickets, okay, which I also had. So, yeah, unfortunately, our plan to beat the road, in fact, doubled the road.
So the tickets are in Dublin?
The tickets were in Dublin, in the bag I bring into work, which is where I had the tickets. And so I had to drive back up first thing on Sunday morning and then back down to Thurles again.
But did you have to make the journey alone?
No, no. She came with me as far as Kildare Village, where I dropped her off to do a bit of calm down shopping as I as I went the rest of the journey on my own back to Dublin. So yeah, this is I had previously come out of, we had actually stopped in Kildare Village on the way down in the first place.
Okay.
And had to get down for lunch before watching France Argentina. It was a very well planned out day. France Argentina being a big part of it, obviously, as you can imagine, as well as the two qualifiers on Sky Sports. So a lot of sport was involved in it. We both already wanted to do that. Lunch first. We came out of Kildare Village and I drove accidentally back towards Dublin. Us not realising it until we came back into the N7 roadworks that everybody knows about at the moment. And I went, how could this be more of it? Not realising I was in fact on the wrong side of the motorway. So then quickly, and we will eventually start talking about so-called weaker county GA teams at some stage. Eventually, coming up towards the next exit, it was kind of Newbridge or whatever. And at the exact moment we'd realised that we were driving on the wrong side of the road. Again, I say we, like it's all my fault. Looked across the other side of the motorway to where there were maybe four ambulances, a fire brigade, and God, like, please God, this was nothing serious. I think it was more a case of just clearing the road. I hope, anyway. I don't mean to be flippant about that, but a tailback going back basically to the M50, you know? So this was, so it added about maybe an hour and a half to the trip in the end.
So you made it to Thurles in time.
Actually, I got going first thing Sunday. Once I kind of had calmed down and made a plan, everything wasn't that bad. It was just that it was a 4-hour trip instead of a 10-minute trip. That was a slight difference. But yeah, no, just in case of getting up early. Made it to the match, and we'll talk about it a bit more later on. But regardless of the result or anything like that, if you've never been to a Munster hurling final, I pity it, because it's an incredible occasion, one of the best things ever. I've been to so many at this stage. But as a Clare fan, that's the best I've been to since the glory days of the 90s.
When you were actually winning them.
Best Clare atmosphere I've felt at a match, including even the 2013 All-Ireland final, since those days. Because they turned up. We were embarrassed last year after it was just all Cork. I was one of about 17 Clare fans at the match. And it was just a sea of red on all four corners of Thurles. And the Clare fans turned up, and they were so loud and so supportive. And it was just obviously, as there always is, there was a huge amount of Cork fans there as well. It was a brilliant atmosphere.
Mm. We'll get into the hurling later on in the show. But I think when you were panicking over your lack of tickets and laughing maniacally in Thurles, Mayo were on their way to being officially confirmed as a so-called weaker county. It's over. To the extent where the Sunday game have now cut together a montage remembering Mayo.
Yeah.
Like a funeral almost. Yeah. It was like there was that sense kind of across the weekend. Like, this is the end of, you know, a team with relatively few players near retirement age. But there was this kind of sense that it's the end of an era, which I think kind of resonates with a lot of people. Like, it is the backlash against this phrase, this kind of label of them being the story of the decade, has been pretty ferocious online. But it genuinely is. You don't agree?
No, I do agree, actually. But I found that there was a backlash because it was a needless comment at the time, where everybody's always trying to put a label on things. And like, I always thought it was quite incredible that Mayo have been beaten by the All-Ireland champions. I've got to 7 semi-finals in a row and beaten by the All-Ireland champions 6 years in a row. I think it's an incredible stat, you know. But I don't know. Does this, the story of the decade or anything like that matter? Like, I mean, it's Dublin's best ever team as well, so.
Yeah, I obviously went on Twitter as soon as the Sunday game showed that montage. It started off really well, that montage. And then it showed from 2011, 2012, a bit from 2013. And then they just skipped to Dean Rocks free and ended it straight on. But I went online to find angry Mayo fans giving out about it. And the most angry fans were Dublin fans giving out. Sure, they didn't win anything.
Yeah. Well, that's stupid as well, by the way. Sorry, I agree with you, Morris, that the backlash is ridiculous. I just wondered that there seemed to be 7 or 8 people jumping on the idea of making it the label and turning it into yet another competition that's divisive for kind of no reason, really, you know?
I feel there's a middle ground there, too. Like, you can praise the heart and kind of constant resilience to come back, while also, like, I was there in the Gaelic grounds when Donny caused unholy wreck. Like, you can critique the way they've lost it, 5 points up against Dublin, and thrown that away as well. Like, there's a middle ground where it doesn't have to be this romantic fairy tale. It just, like, at times they completely threw it away to an almost farcical extent.
Unbelievable resilience over the years, to keep coming back. Because if you think about it, it's like they lost to the eventual All-Ireland champions every year, but twice that, once that was Kerry and once it was Donegal in the final. The rest of the time it's Dublin.
Yeah.
It's the same team they're losing to all the time. Like, probably the best football team ever.
Yeah.
And you can argue for the reasons as to why and all the various different ways that people would put down Dublin, but ultimately they are an unbelievable football team, and Mayo probably could have won 2 All-Irelands, and it's like, it's easily Mayo's best ever team. No matter how many All-Irelands they won before.
Still didn't win the All-Ireland. Yeah. Is it the end of an era? Because there was a lot of listing off of players in the wrong side of 30 and these guys that retire without an All-Ireland. Like, I don't really... Like, a few of them will go. Like, Lee Keegan, I don't think he's 30 yet. I think he's 28. I Googled it today. 28. I think so. Like, I mean, there's a lot... I don't know. I feel that we're riding them off a little bit too soon.
Starting midfield, injured, hard thing to come back from. Mm. Some years you get injuries. Yeah. And like, you know, that I don't know if they had them as bad before. Not in as crucial, like to lose two players in the same position.
You're losing your midfielders and during the qualifiers as well, where it's week on week, and then they would have been facing the Super 8s.
Yeah.
And there's also a point that it's kind of a constant critique, and I think there's something in it. The depth of the Mayo squad, like, was already touch and go. Like, Keane Hanley coming back, there was a lot of noise about that. And but you got, 2 minutes at the weekend to... Jim O'Connor did really, really well in midfield, starting in there, but he's accounting for, you're pulling someone out from us. Like, I think they made 4 subs at the weekend in a game, I mean, that heat in a game, that kind of attritional, it's a pretty low number. I think there's an underlying point that, maybe it's to what you were talking about, Gav, with the idea that a lot of these players aren't coming up to pace because of the level set by this current Mayo team. Like, they're good players, very good players, but not at an All-Ireland winning or challenging team even.
Yeah, I even think that's athletically more than anything else. That Mayo team are some of the fittest lads I've ever seen play football.
Yeah. My worry would be, there's no real reason to think it's an end of an era if you look at, you know, every year there's going to be a turnover of 2-3 players and so on. But it is that it was such an exceptional team. So if you take out Colin Boyle, Keith Higgins and Andy Moran out of that team.
They were the three.
They're three of Mayo's best ever players. You don't just replace them. Like, maybe Dublin can, with the way the system is at the moment and the way Dublin have got their act together and various things, maybe they can have a conveyor belt. But other than them and Kerry, no other team can ever really do that. And this is that, like, Mayo probably did have a golden generation there, and I can't see how they're just going to have another load of lads come in and replace. Imagine having to replace Colin Boyle and Lee Higgins out of your 6 backs in 1 year. I don't know if they'll retire, but...
I think there's also something in the fact that...
Colin Boyle looked like he'd slowed up a bit this year, I have to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, well...
So did Moran.
But Moran and Clark, I think, are the two kind of prime candidates you think may go, which might not be a bad thing. Like, if we were talking about the game for a second, this is something that we've talked a lot about, but it was underpinned by this weekend, and it's the importance of kickouts in the game. Like, Clark was a goalkeeper of the year less than a year ago, and at the weekend was found out because his traditional thing of kicking out around the middle of the park, Jimmy Guinness broke this down incredibly well on Sky Sports, which was... they would almost leave O'Shea free for a split second while pushing up. And then when he landed with the ball, was swarmed instantly. And there was no plan B. He wasn't able to ping it short or a Brody-esque take it to a cornerback and get it back. And the same thing happened to rub dirt into Mick's wounds already. With Clare at the weekend, at the end. I know it's a third-choice goalkeeper. It's a third-choice goalkeeper. But the exact same thing. The inability to gain primary possession because... ball was going over the sideline or he couldn't pick a short kick out. Like, within a year, the game has evolved so much that the goalkeeper is already that important, and that kind of, that inability to mask, that might not be a bad thing for me. Like, Mayo need to find somebody else who can do that if Clark isn't the answer.
Yeah. Sorry, do you want to come in with something?
No, I was going to say we should talk about Kildare because since we last were here, they got to play in Newbridge.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a well-told story, but it's all in the space of the last week that I think everybody watching that game on Saturday night realizes that, like, I just hope, and I don't know, I'd like to know what you guys think. Is that a watershed moment for, do you know what? Let's forget about this idea of having to have 15, 20,000 people at every game and let's fill these venues and make these exciting occasions. Because I'm sorry that... Kildare might have won that game anyway, and it might have been a massive deal in retrospect, but the excitement that we had building up to that game and then during that game just wouldn't have existed if that saga didn't happen last week and we weren't in the full ground where people couldn't get tickets for. It was just a fantastic occasion.
You are right, but the optimism that things will change. Like, what will happen?
There's no real reason to think that.
What will happen is there'll be a rule brought to Congress next year that will be so... dull and dreary worded that no one will really pay attention to when it's passed, and then it'll tighten up the rules and allow the CCCC to change these round 3 qualifiers as well, because they can do that with round 4 qualifiers and the Super 8s. That's why Dublin will get 2 games in Croke Park, because they've covered themselves in terms of the law. They left a bit of a loophole and that'll be closed. That's its legacy. But I agree with you that the qualifiers, the real magic of the qualifiers, and what will ultimately be the arguably the biggest selling point of the Super 8s is the touring of these massive games and packing in relative to Croke Park, relatively small grounds around the country.
But is Keane O'Neill, if he was driving this, and you get the impression that he was, he's come in for a lot of criticism this year, mainly from Kerry, strangely. Yeah. But obviously with everything that's happening in with Kildare's league form and then losing to Carlow, they're in the Super 8s. Or, well, they're not in the Super 8s. They have to beat Fermanagh to get into the Super 8s. Yeah, exactly. You know, and I completely misspoke there because that's far from a foregone conclusion. And probably second favourites to beat Fermanagh. But they're on the verge of getting into the Super 8s. And they lost to Carlow a couple of months ago. And they didn't win a game in the league. The turnaround's been brilliant.
Yeah.
And really, really impressive. And for all the shit that Keane O'Neill got, I think he deserves the same amount of credit this time, you know? And maybe he developed a siege mentality. I don't know.
I think it was a masterclass. The way he handled his tactics on the game, the way he spoke afterwards as well. Like he totally fronted up about his own failings. He hasn't avoided that criticism. In a way, he's almost embraced it. Like he's totally adamant that he's made mistakes and that he's trying to address them. I thought the way he handled that week was a total masterclass.
Yeah, absolutely. Credit to another manager, Kieran McGeaney. I'm looking at a tweet here by Will Slattery, the Irish Indo. Kieran McGeaney has 10 odd seasons, has had an odd 10 seasons as an Inter-County manager. 7 wins out of 17 provincial games, that's 42% win ratio, but 22 wins out of 26 in the qualifiers, that's 85%. Mm. So if we put Kieran McGeaney in charge of Longford, we'll be Super 8 every single year.
Yeah.
Back to her.
Why not? It's his next logical step.
What happened, Clare, Mick? All went
wrong. They ran out of legs, I think. Look, I mean, I didn't see the game. I was listening a little bit on the radio as much as I could, and I was following on Twitter, and obviously we've seen whatever we've seen in the highlights. Armagh probably a better team than Clare, let's face it, but Clare did have them on the rack and had them beaten. I think there's a couple of things together there. You're a little bit white line fever, you have to be honest, right?
That, from Clare?
Yeah, okay. I think you have to be honest, but I think it does go with the away game, a long journey up to Armagh, the weather, all combined with a 6-day turnaround to where Armagh had 7. And the Clare Offaly game was an absolute cracker. Went down to, you know, the 75th, 76th minute. I think Clare ended up winning by 2, but it was level in injury time. You know, so that was only 6 days before. That was a Sunday afternoon game. I think they just ran out of legs. And then I think Armagh did kind of what, kind of like Mayo did against Tip in the previous round of the qualifiers, you know, where they were just like, once they got going, once something went for them, they just kicked on. So Armagh probably being a better team just did that. You were talking earlier, Morris, about how many wides they had in the game, you know. So
18 wides, which is kind of phenomenal. Like, you touched on the home advantage thing there again. It's kind of funny that Clare were drawn out first, but they didn't get home advantage because they're drawn against Division 3 team, despite the fact that the Boke and me Division 2 teams.
Yeah.
And this is what.
And Armagh would be naturally massive favourites. It was just a coincidence of the league.
It was a quirk,
Again,
it stresses the same thing we're talking about with Kildare, how important home advantage is, the same thing that Munster Hurling showed this year. And once again, I think that's the biggest takeaway that I hope GAA Hiker can take away from this year, is how important home advantage is, and that it's not in the interest of disadvantaging the best team in the country. It's in the interest of fairness that Dublin would play Donegal in a neutral venue. It's not about how strong. I spoke to Jimmy Guinness last week, and he was stressing the fact that he reckons the Super 8s was introduced because Dublin were running away with it, and that maybe it was a neutralizer. And I don't think that's actually what it is for. I don't think that's something to do with it. But I do think if they were to try and implement just fairness, just a degree of competition, that first game Dublin Donegal should be played in Clonus or should be played in some neutral venue. Doesn't even have, bring it out to Munster or bring it down to Tullamore, but somewhere outside of Croke Park, I think, because whether or not you want to, it's a fact that Dublin's home ground right now is Croke Park, and that the advantage showed to Armagh at the weekend, Armagh's late rally. If you watch the Sunday game highlights back, you could hear the noise really get going.
Roy
Groom kicked a score. The biggest score or the biggest cheer in those last 5 minutes was when Clare's keeper kicked the ball out over the sideline, and there was a massive roar, and that's like a crest of a wave. That carries teams. You can see, I think they outscored Clare 1-5 to no score in those last 5 minutes.
Yeah, I think I thought it was a 9-point turnaround, or 8-point turnaround maybe. Yeah, just and they ended up losing.
Yeah, Armagh were 4 points down with 3 minutes of normal time left. Now there was 6 or 7 minutes additional time, but they won by 4 in the end. So 8-point swing.
There's also something to be said, go ahead. Just very quickly on Roy Grugan, who I think his most unappreciated forward in the country right now. That's he scored 5 points the week and won 5 the week before. Was unbelievable in the league. He's definitely in the running for an All-Star. So he was playing inside with Andrew Mernon, and they've pulled them both. Like, Andrew Mernon has been this weird thing where you see a big man, you instantly assume he's going to be playing on the inside of the square. Mm-hmm. And then when he drifts out, he's actually very good out around the middle. And Grugan is the same. Like, rather than just shoehorn them two into this two-man full forward line, they've actually come out and been fantastic.
Yeah. Elsewhere, Tyrone and Cavan, my notes down here in front of me have a disgrace of a game. Mark Farrelly isn't on mic today because I think he's yet to be awoken from the hate, from the snooze that game put him in. Did anyone watch this? Does anyone want to comment on it, or will we move swiftly on and pretend it never happened?
I did watch it, and there's no great need to comment on it.
There's one thing I would say, though. There was a minute and a half clip that I think I retweeted. I'm not sure. It was going around Twitter anyway, of Cavan late in the game. I think they were maybe a point down at the time, just passing it around for a minute and a half and then eventually just losing it in a really simple way. There's a part of, like, there was an element of that's terrible stuff. Cavan weren't actually doing anything wrong in that. There's not much you can do when there's literally 15 men kind of lined up in tree banks behind you there. It's just, it was such a, it was a brilliant clip just to show you what's wrong with Gaelic football as a spectator sport. You know, there's plenty right with it as well. I'm not being like Joe Brawley here or anything like that. But when you're watching that, it is tiresome. It's like watching a defensive soccer, like, you know.
Basketball without the shot clock.
Yeah, exactly. Basketball without any forward momentum whatsoever, yeah. You know. And it was just dreadful. And the thing that's really lost from it is these teams who are passing around the back, what's really missing, and I just really noticed, was even just seeing the throne colours, I was just thinking of, God, what you want is an Owen Mulligan or someone coming from a forward position to put them under pressure. They don't have that, so everybody's just lined up in front. So Cavan could do whatever they wanted to try and prize open the defence. It could take however long they wanted because there's 15 men all the way back. There's nobody. It's an interesting tactical evolution that I would wonder about, because those players that are higher up the field can help you defensively. You know, wow. I'd be interested in actually, especially what you think about this, Morris, because It was just something that I was watching going, this is pointless. You might stop a point, but you're losing 3-4 minutes out of the game.
But it's like, if you were to watch what Cavan did, they pulled that. I know the clip, exact clip you're talking about. I haven't seen it on Twitter, but I know the clip you're talking about. It's the one where, I would assume it's the one where Shawnee Johnson is out on the middle. He kicks the ball backwards first, and then they carry it forward. They go from left to right, come back, and then they end up losing it on the right-hand side, I think is the one you're talking about.
But yeah, I think they won a free and then lost it. They kicked the free straight.
And it got intercepted. Frank Burns went up the other end, that was actually at a different point. But there's a point on what you're saying, which is that 2 weeks ago, Kieran Whelan put up a graphic on the Sunday game of Shawnee Johnson's possessions out around the middle, and this idea that they were getting the most out of him by getting him out around the middle of the park and getting on the ball, and that he was going to create stuff inside. And that's not, like, there's this obsession I find a lot in Sunday game with possessions. The same thing happened to Kieran Kilkenny, where if a player's coming out and getting on the ball and they put up every area in the field they touch it, it looks like he's having a really good game. But what he's doing the whole time, it's like the old, which was funnily it was a wrong critic of Michael Carrick, which is, oh, he only passes backwards and sideways. But Johnson literally does only pass backwards and sideways when he's out there. And then when he finally got the ball inside, he himself went into the inside forward and kicked a great score. The problem is that there's this kind of obsession with retention. And there's no real, like, I wouldn't blame Tyrone for that being a bad game at all. I think, because Tyrone and Meath was a good game. And that was because what Meath were trying to do
it was close.
And also because Meath, at some extent, firstly, they were unbelievably athletic, the likes of Mickey Burke, wing halfbacks and half forwards, who will carry the ball into, try and break, like, that initial bank when you it's like basketball, when a team totally filters back, the other team kind of slowly meanders forward, meets them at that line, and then passes for a minute or 2 minutes or 3 minutes, trying to eventually work a score. Like, there's a, Leash and Carlo was another example, actually, Gavin, the game that you were at. Leash went beyond that by, yes, they only had two men inside, They're used to that. Like, it wasn't, we'll retain possession here until we break it down. It's like, we'll have a go. And if we get turned over, we're not that worried about it, because you've got a one-off runner and two men up front. So yeah, we're not left open. Like, it's not naive in that you're totally overcommitting going
forward. So does it literally come down to players being more brave in committing to breaking tackles?
Essentially, at a very kind of elementary, a fundamental level, yes. But it also, it's kind of like, there has to be an onus that we're going to take the game to ye. Like, we're not going to, like, there was almost this extent where, like, Cavan were not in this game. The goal was, it was a block shot that dropped short. Brady punched this and it went in, but it wasn't orchestrated. It wasn't clever. It was luck. And that's what the problem with that kind of style of system is, what you're trying to do is you're trying to, it's like a big leveler, but ultimately what you're trying to do is you're trying to come down to very, very lucky breaks, a break of a ball or something like that. And that, you can't, these things you can't plan for, and it's kind of, it's a flip of a coin. And this is a Cavan team that were incredible in the league, really attacking football. So it's kind of a shame to, like, they have these ball carriers that we're talking about with Meath. They have them. Like, Darren McVitie got his suspension overturned and was there. But what happened was he'd catch the ball on the left, he'd run it across to the right, hand pass it off, and they kicked the ball back 20 yards.
Yeah, they did look like they'd never seen it before.
Yeah, their change of style is disgraceful. My point just was slightly different, though. I do think Tyrone have a part to play in it, and they could do what they want. But ultimately, from what I like to see, I don't understand why you wouldn't have two players playing behind this possession game and not concede possession. I just think that they could be as effective behind the play as they are in front of it. That's just a thought. And yeah, I think that's what a lot of teams do. If you look at even Leash, I was at that game against Dublin, like, Leash do play two up top and they're bloody always there. And they wouldn't let you pass around that ball for a minute and a half like that, you know? And I think a lot of teams do that. It's all you need. I'm not talking about playing, you know, everybody in their positions 1 to 15 or anything, you know?
I'd
love to see that, though. I'd love to see a football game like that just for the laugh, just to see what it'd be like.
Say if Cavan did what Leash did to Carlow, which is when... So you back your defenders. So if Carlo drop all their men back, Leash, say if Cavan did this now, Leash pushed every man up, man on man. So at times you could have 12 men on men inside that area. So all of a sudden, there's no... like, a sweeper, what often happens is a sweeper doesn't actually complement a defence. It compensates for it. So it's a loose man and he'll cover for that, like a man marker that's not actually sick with his man. But for example, if Cavan had pushed up, so they had every man on man, 12 men each on each other, then all of a sudden it's man on man again. So there's no sweeper competent. So if you can get one man who gets away from his man and he's free, that's it. That's your score right there. As opposed to having 12 on 6 and then you've got everybody else outside the 45 and they're just useless there. All they're doing is passing the ball to each other. So if you pushed up every man, like literally man on man, every man follows his man, even when you're an attacker, to the extent where now you've got 12 players inside that area and then all it takes is one of those. Like, we've seen... all you need is half a step and a lot of those forwards would put it over the bar, but it's just the fact that they're not actually in there. The likes of Macy and Shawnee Johnston and Darren McVitie are out around the middle of the field instead.
Elsewhere in the qualifiers, Monaghan continue their rehabilitation with 13-point win over Leitrim. Not too much.
Leitrim played well in that for a while, though, just on the back of talking to Emlyn Mulligan last week. I don't know, it's not one of those games that we need to even talk about, like, how come Leitrim didn't win or how come they lost by 12 points. That's just the way football is, and they're very, very, very far off Monaghan, but they didn't disgrace themselves anyway.
Yeah, a highlight of the game was probably on Shannon's site. I can't remember the commentator, so forgive me on that, but their line that Rory Began can literally kick the ball a mile and a half, which is a little, maybe too much Jamie Redknapp for local commentator.
Does it defy physics? Literally defy physics. I've heard that about Pavon's goal in the World Cup a few times.
Is that Jerry Canning's GA commentary?
I don't think so. I think it was actually on an English TV, but I think that the goal literally defied physics.
God, Jerry Canning. Like, I mean, there was this beautiful like slice across the ball. It was like a Roger Federer forehand. Jerry Canning, it reacted as if Stephen O'Neill just kicked a point in Omer or something, and he's welly. Anyway, the Kildare's footballer stance against the GAA caught national attention this week, but the resolution to Newbridge or nowhere wasn't the end of the discontent between Kildare and HQ. 2 days before the Joe McDonagh Chrissy Ring Cup playoff between Kildare and Antrim, both panels released a joint statement criticising the fact that this game had to be played at all and called for the McDonagh Cup to remain a 16 competition, as we have talked about ad nauseum on this show. Kildare were further annoyed that the game was fixed for the athletic grounds in Armagh, and it was just a week after their Chrissy Ring Cup final win. Antrim won the game by 12 points, so it went to form. But as you're about to hear, this isn't the end of the story. Earlier this afternoon, I spoke to Kildare captain Brian Byrne, and I began by asking him if the fact that they weren't promoted has taken the gloss off winning the Chrissy Ring Cup.
Yeah, you could say it's a bittersweet thing, all right. At the start of the year, we kind of set out that to win Chrissy Ring, which is our All-Ireland, was our main goal, and that was something that we just had in our heads. We looked no further or any of that sort of stuff. we made sure that that was the biggest thing in our head. And look, to be honest, we went out, we done that. We aimed to achieve, winning Christy Ring, and that's exactly what we done. And then to go and have to, essentially, it's kind of saying that, and our manager Joe said it last week, that it's a pity that our biggest game of the year was this weekend just gone in a promotion relegation battle against Antrim. And really, that's not the way it should be done. Our biggest game of the year should have been our Christy Ring, our All-Ireland final. And unfortunately, that wasn't the way it was done. So, yeah, you could say, I hope the lads, from my perspective anyway, I hope the lads don't forget that they won their All-Ireland this year. They won their Christy Ring. It's a huge achievement to do anything like that. Obviously, the weekend was disappointing and we didn't get the result that we were looking for. But at the end of the day, they won their All-Ireland. It's a huge achievement. So there's definitely a mix of emotions there between the in the week that's just gone by.
Yeah, definitely. The operative phrase there is your All-Ireland, Brian. Did the fact that you had to play Antrim in Armagh on a Saturday morning just a week after winning the All-Ireland, did it take away from the celebrations at all?
I don't think it took away from the celebration. Like, you can't ask lads that have just done what they've done on Saturday previous to tell them, right lads, no, that's it, we can't celebrate, we have to put our heads down now and look at this game. Like, the guys have to celebrate. That's what they aim to do at the start of the year, and when you do it, there's a sense of enjoyment there, and you've got to go and be happy with it, and you have to celebrate with your teammates. Like, it's only necessary to do it. But I suppose then, kind of, as the week went on, we had to get together and we had to try and focus the minds and all that. So it was definitely a little bit, it was difficult enough anyway to kind of eventually put a halt to it and just say, right, we need to start looking at the game on Saturday. Like, there wasn't the best of preparations. It's evident in that.
Yeah, of course. So this joint letter between yourself and the Antrim panel arrived a couple of days before the game. In it, you say both panels believe it is, quote, incumbent on us to highlight the unfairness and inconsideration surrounding this fixture in the hope that we can positively affect change for the future. Brian, could you maybe run us through the process of where, obviously there was a bit of discontent among your panel at having to play this game. Could you run us through the process which culminated in this joint statement coming out?
Yeah, sure. Obviously, as you said we were unhappy with what we had to do. So we felt it was upon ourselves to kind of almost investigate it further, see what the sources were and see what and how Antrim felt. And credit to the GPA in this scenario, because we got in contact with them. They said that they were very helpful. They'd be interested in helping us and backing us in whatever we needed to say or what we needed to do. And then they came up with the idea then that we would discuss with Antrim and see how they felt. And the exact same way as we felt, we were aggrieved that we had to go and play another game after winning the Christy Ring. And they felt they were aggrieved that they had to play a game when they didn't finish last in their competition. Meath were below them and Meath were being relegated as it was. So they were in the exact same circumstances as us. They weren't happy they had to play a game. So we said that probably the best stance was that we come together and fight our corner together.
Mm. Did you ever give thought to boycotting the game altogether?
Look, there was thoughts of it in that. It's a difficult one because, as they said, and as we said in the statement, we understand that the fixture was there and it'd be agreed upon and set since before the competition commenced. So we were probably going to put ourselves in too much danger if we were just going to throw the game, and then we wouldn't really have a stance or a leg to stand on ourselves. So instead of that, we said we can put the statement forward, we'll play the game, we'll give it our best shot, we'll put the statement out, and then what we'll do is we'll take a couple of weeks break now from the end of the season, and then we'll come together again and we'll fight our corner again. Whereas by here playing the game, we play by their rules, we've done everything, so it's now up to them to listen to us and understand where we're coming from. So we can fix this and make sure this doesn't happen again. Like, there's guys on our team there in Kildare that have now won two Christy Rings and have never played in a Joe McDonough or a second tier or close to the Lee McCarthy because of this rule back in 2014 and this year again. Yeah. And some of those guys are stepping away from Kildare now because they've come to the end of their time. And it's just unfortunate that guys like that who have given so much years of service haven't got their chance to promote the Kildare hurling.
Yeah, so what happens now? You're not going to let this die yet, are you?
No, absolutely not. That's not, that's something that we're definitely not going to do. And it's something that we were able, because we were able to get the statement out, we were able to get a bit of settle the concrete a little bit there. So we're just, lads, we've just finished the game of the weekend. We're just going to take maybe a week or so and just relax and sort out everyone else's lives outside hurling. And then we come together again. I myself and Neil spoke with Neil and Weenie Condit. We spoke with Neil McManus then after the game briefly and just said, look, we'll relax now for a couple of weeks and we'll come together again and we'll set a path out on how best to approach this, and we look forward to pushing it on further again and resolving the issue.
Yeah. Do you know how you're going to do that? Is that similar to what you do with the statement? Both panels come together and lobby the GAA to revert the Joe McDonagh back to a 6-team competition?
From what I gather and from the approach that we're looking at taking before, I believe that's the best. That's the best, and we believe it's the best way to go with the two of us together. And from what Neil has said and from what other teams are saying, a lot of the teams in the Joe McDonagh are happy with 6 teams in it. And it's the exact same as the issue that they had in the Leinster and the Munster matches this year in the Championship, was there were 5 teams. Some teams were playing 4 weeks in a row, and it was dragging out. It was evident. Whereas if you have the 6 teams, teams will play 2 or 3 weeks. They'll have their breaks and they'll go again for another 2 games or whatever. So it just makes more sense, and we don't understand why it just seems like we're not trying to promote the lower tiers, like, and it's just very unfortunate. So as I said, the best possible scenario for us now is to come together with Antrim, try and rally the backing of the other Joe McDonagh Cup teams, and then lobby that forward to the GAA.
Yeah. Has there been any communication with the GAA since the publication of the statement?
Not as far as I'm aware of, anyway. Since the statement has gone out, we kind of just went and focused on the game. So we haven't, I actually wasn't the person touching base with the GPA or Neil McManus from Antrim. So I haven't heard anything from the GPA or the GAA. I don't know if they sent any publication or any voice their concern towards it or anything. But it's something that we look forward to communicating with them once we get back together and set our path straight.
Yeah, definitely. Well, it's not at the end of this story. Just before we go, Brian, I think it would be right and proper to look back at the Chrissy Ring competition and how successful it was. And I think the story of your teammate James Burke really captured the attention nationally. The guy was in a coma in April, and then he hit 8 points in Croke Park in the Chrissy Ring Cup final for you. How inspiring is it to have that kind of a guy and that kind of a story in the dressing room?
It was huge, and I just got to the back to the start of the sentence there. It's only right to look back on the Chrissy Ring. It is huge, and then again, I just want to reiterate that I hope the guys don't look too downly on the situation just went on the weekend. Like, they did win the Chrissy Ring. It's a huge achievement from the depths of the despair after the league. We had a poor league, and just things weren't going right for us, and the guys turned it around. Everyone there, from the players to the back room to management, everyone turned it around and were able to win the Chrissy Ring. So that was a huge boost for us. And then again, with the likes of James is an exceptional character on and off the field. He gives it absolutely everything. It was Good Friday where I received a phone call off Joe to say that James had been put into an induced coma. There was vigils and prayers and masses and everything being held on the Sunday for him, hoping that he was going to make it through the night. And then for a chap like him to turn around, come on against Wicklow, come on against Derry, and then score 8 points in an All-Ireland final in Croke Park, it's truly phenomenal, and it's a true testament to the character this guy is. Situation in the middle of the year there kind of brought a realistic element to the team, probably brought us a lot closer again, and it was fantastic that we were able to have a reward at the end of the year to look back on all those moments.
Yeah, it's an extraordinary story. Brian, best of luck yourselves in Antrim versus the GAA. I think that's definitely something that we're going to get right behind, so do keep us up to date as to how it goes. Thanks so much for taking the call.
Absolutely.
Today.
Yeah.
Really appreciate it. So that's not the end of that.
I hope not.
Yeah.
Like, I don't see a GAA cave. I don't think that they'll want to change the competitions, but it doesn't make any sense not to.
Mm. Well, this is Liam Sheedy's that talked openly about this. Was it Michael Ryan was on this very show talking about why
everybody involved in the John McDonagh Cup wants it to be six teams? It's, everybody.
It's accidentally been an enormous success.
Yeah.
And now they're going to change it. It's unbelievable. Hurling hipster in the corner, Morris Brosnan, went to the McDonagh Cup final and then fecked off before the Leinster final started.
Well, he came to work, in fairness. As a proud Galway man, I will, just in case his family are listening here, I will stand up to him. He's not yet taken like Leinster titles for granted or anything.
I was actually with, like, I went in to meet my younger brother who was up there with my former hurling club, Rahun Newcastle, and it was one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life to leave before that Galway game. The John McDonagh final itself, like I've seen a lot of kind of complimenting about this game, and I think it's kind of unintentional patronising. Like, I would love, and there's been some really good games within the John McDonagh Cup final. This really wasn't one of them. It wasn't that competitive. Carlow were a lot better, like a lot, which is kind of surprising given how, you know, based on the league form and based on John McDonagh form, these two teams are neck and neck. But Carlow were, I thought, far and away better. So they kind of did this. They were very Cullen Bonner, who also won a lot of Fitzgibbon Cups with WIT, with Brick Wash back then in 06. He was kind of had this tactics down to a T. So he played with two men effectively inside the square where Tom Doyle, the Westmeath fullback, was, who's probably one of the best hurlers in the country, but then just didn't put the ball in near them. So it took him totally out of the game. And kind of because Carlow had so many bodies out on the middle, they generally won breaks, and when Westmead had the ball, we're kind of swarming them, and the end result was that Carlow generally had most of the possession. Alan Corkin, the Carlow cornerback, did an unbelievable job on Isle O'Brien, so effectively took him out of the game, who's their primary scorer. Like Carlow were just better based off this one game. Like it's kind of weird how one-sided it looked at the very just before half time. Angus Clark, who I've waxed irky about in this office a lot, had an unbelievable goal chance and blazed it over the bar. And from the resulting puck out, because it was a 2-on-1 and he took his chance, he didn't take his chance, sorry, his man hadn't even followed him. So the end result of him not taking his goal was that he was free for the next puck out, got the ball, and then because he was free, carried it 30 yards, poked it in, and they ended up scoring a goal. So his missed chance had way bigger replication than maybe he would have thought. And that was the effect that ended the game, just before half time. Carlow, all of a sudden, were 2 points ahead, never went behind from there, tore out in the second half, and Westmead and Man sent off the end just down to frustration. But Carlow were like, I can imagine the handicap for this Limerick game of the weekend is going to be massive, but the way they play, I think, is a good kind of neutralizer. Like I wouldn't be surprised if they gave Limerick a rattle. I'm not saying I am not saying they're going to beat Limerick, but I wouldn't be surprised if they came close.
Really? Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, like if they have any chance. I'd prefer if they were playing Wexford. I feel
I 100% agree with you. I think that would be, if Carlow,
especially with Colin Bonner as the manager, former manager. Yeah.
I would totally change my tune if that was the case. Like the two Cody's centre forward and centre back are as good as hurlers as I've seen in a long time. And this not just based off that game, this has been throughout the league. Alan Corkin is just, it's only when you kind of play hurling and you realise how hard it is to be a fullback or a cornerback, and he's just an expert at it. So like Dennis Murphy inside, his place balls were incredible. Chris Nolan scored an unbelievable goal, actually got the better of Tom Doyle, which is no easy feat. So but I'm not saying they're, again, I just think the fact that they pull so many men out, like Limerick will probably only play with two inside anyway, and then Graham McKay kind of floating out around the middle. So if they were to, it's kind of like a neutralizer. It's like you've so many bodies there that, in a way, after just criticizing it, in a way it kind of comes down to luck, that you're hoping that by crowding that area, like not necessarily playing a sweeper, but you just pull, you physically pull, you play all your hurling from the 65 out and just leave two really talented forwards inside. And the fact is as well that Dennis Murphy will probably have an easier afternoon against the Limerick fullback, we don't know if that's going to be Seamus Hickey or what they're going to do there, but I would wager he'd have an easier time against the Limerick fullback than he would have against Westmeath's fullback.
Was there anybody from Galway, Kilkenny, or what?
No, that was my biggest kind of complaint about this game. So I live in Drumcondra, so I walked down to the game, and the amount of Carlow fans were just so good to see. They just, the same thing as the Leinster semi-final, they just travel in numbers. It's kind of admirable. Not to criticise them, but I was kind of disappointed with the amount of Westmeath fans. It was a weird one. I was in for the game, and then I walked back to the office and started watching the Galway game, And then it was kind of, I was watching TV, I was like, that amount of Westmeath fans definitely wasn't there. And then I realized they're all Galway fans who just come in who just come in afterwards. And, but the most disappointing thing about, right, so the Munster final was on at the same time. That was obviously a really stupid oversight. And you wouldn't blame anybody realistically for opting for the Munster final when that game was on. But the most disappointing thing was, as I was leaving, I left at the end of that game walking out for, so I maybe 5 minutes left, I was starting making my way out. And the amount of Galway and Kilkenny fans sitting out in the sun outside, like, you kind of felt like roaring at them. There's a hurling game inside, lads. Like, they're just sitting out, having a beer or whatever. Like, there was just no interest from those kind of general fans. And maybe it's that they realised there wasn't really a game developing, that Carrow were running away with it. But that was kind of slightly disappointing. The crowd itself was kind of disappointing to see. You would have loved to have seen them, given what they were deserved.
It genuinely, as someone that's been to like five games this year, like it hasn't seeped down. People are only interested in their own teams on the day when you're at the matches. It's a strange thing because everyone always says, oh, put the B final on before or S final, people will be interested and stuff like that. I think if you're watching on TV or if you're just a fan at home, there is an element to that. You'd watch the first game, you'd get into it, you'd develop a thing. When you develop a kind of an interest in the narrative that's going on in front of you. There is an element, especially when like the minor game was on Tipperary and Limerick for the Munster final. I've been to all the Clare games I was at this year. I went to the minor game beforehand and it's like I'd made a real effort to do it. I got to know that team a little bit. And I've seen the Tip team and the Limerick team against Clare. I thought they were both brilliant. Like, would have been excited to watch that match. But on the day, I wanted to be in meeting up with different members of my family and old friends and stuff for a few minutes out in the sun. And then we went in and watched the other match. There is like about 45 minute and to an hour wait as well, sitting there and doing nothing in the stadium. You know, and it's okay in Crow Park, but in other places. So, like, I do fully understand it as a fan why you wouldn't go in and watch the other match. I really do. It's part of the day is kind of meeting up with people, having a drink, and then going in to watch the only match that you actually care about, which is your
own
team.
And is there nothing that can be done about that? Is there not a level of marketing or something that can be?
There really matters.
They need to come from their own counties as well, like, you know.
But if we were to bring, like, put it on from the game, let people see, like, if we were all familiar and saw the point Angus Clark scored against Carlo over his shoulder at the end there, or his performance against Meath, or Jack Goulding from Kerry, or Tom Doyle, if you got to see Tom Doyle in the game, you would genuinely become, like, impressed and kind of want to see more of these players because they are that good. Like, there's kind of this weird thing where we talk about, you know, tier championships, and it's kind of like they're so much inferior that we kind of don't regard it. But those kind of players would make you want to watch it and want to see it. And I think maybe just if we could get to see more of them, just even if it's just if you could see them for 5 minutes at the end of the game, just recognize how good they were. I genuinely believe, like, if people realize that one of the best fullbacks in the country, that's the problem. Like, I think Galway and Kilkenny fans didn't realise one of the best fullbacks in the country was playing. Now, as it turns out, he didn't have that good a game. But one of the best fullbacks in the country is playing in this game, or a hurler who, in the Fitzgibbon Cup, was one of the best hurlers in the year, Niall O'Brien, was playing. I think that would attract people to come and actually watch. I genuinely believe that.
Yeah. Well, the big boys will be seeing lots of Carlow next year, promoted to Division 1B. They are promoted to the Leinster Hurling Championship. And just in case you're unaware, because it's quite plausible that you will be, Carlow are playing Limerick and Westmeath are playing Wexford in what are preliminary quarterfinals next weekend.
Yeah.
Or this coming weekend, should I say. They have home advantage. The winners obviously get into the All-Ireland quarterfinals. As two very obvious favourites. I doubt we're going to see.
I said that I did say Clare are playing Wexford next. Let's get ready for that in a kind of a, you know, let's get back on the horse thing. And, like, Jesus, as someone that's involved in this podcast, I have to say, when I realised what I did, I was quite ashamed of myself almost. But this is a, like, as much as I'd love to see both of them, as you say, maybe give them a game, neither of them are going to win the game. And it is kind of a, what's the best word for it?
It's a gauge anyway. We'll see where they're at, like, especially.
Yeah, but what I mean is it's just a nod, like, as if to say, like, oh, look, you're not forgotten about. You're not out of the competition. You could still win it. But, like, it's a pointless game. Like,
this follows up on the Kildare interview with Brian, where they won their All-Ireland and then couldn't really celebrate because they had a game to play the next week, and they make the point that that's our All-Ireland final. That should be our last game of the year to culminate in that. So maybe is that, like, Carlow and Westmeath, I don't know who was harder actually for it to come out and play that game again this weekend. Maybe Westmeath. Is there a point that maybe should these games be before the final?
Yeah.
Or should they exist at all?
Maybe they should exist. I don't know. There's no problem with them. I just, lip service is what they are. And is the word I was, the easy word I was looking for a minute ago. And they shouldn't be disguised. They shouldn't be treated as anything but. Whether yeah. they're there or not is fine. Like, it doesn't matter.
I'd hate to see a glass ceiling put on the John McDonagh Cup so that you don't see possible progression into the senior championship. Even if it is just lip service, I think they've earned that much. Mm. Like, you have to remember, a lot of these teams have accepted relegation down to this competition to facilitate this new format.
That's true.
The idea that you would just put a glass ceiling on them and say, okay, your chance to come again next year.
Promotion is a big thing. Like, they should always have the ability to move up when they're ready for it, you know?
But yeah, big time. And for me, that's what's going to be so important. Like, this, whatever happens this weekend, Carlow Hurlers have had an unbelievable year. They weren't favourite to win the league. I interviewed Richard Cody at the start of the year, who's co-captain, and he had said it's the proudest day he's had in a Carlow jersey. That was before they'd won a John McDonagh Cup. That was before this had even started. They've now won a John McDonagh Cup. But this, the only, I would be kind of pro it, because it gives them a chance to gauge where are we at? Like, where, for your own sake, it's just... not like, it's not just competition, it's just for that, it's for them. Like, and maybe it is just lip service, but I think they deserve that much.
Yeah.
By the way, Gavin, I've changed my mind yet again on whether Offaly should be relegated or not, and now I think they shouldn't.
Why?
Because
they've got this hand. I mean, they should be winning the Joe McDonagh Cup, although
that's what I'm saying, but
I wouldn't be guaranteed that they will.
It's not because of Offaly anymore, because there's a part of me that's starting to think of it from the other side and starting to think of a team like Carlow coming up into the championship. It's no good them winning the John McDonagh Cup, going losing every game by 20 points in the Leinster Championship, getting relegated, going back to the John McDonagh Cup and fighting their arse off to get back out of it again. There's no real progression there. What they need is the chance to stay around for a couple of years. They need the chance to develop and to be there and to play Kilkenny every single year and play Galway every single year. And all they have to do to really manage that is to beat Offaly. You know, or awfully likewise, you know what I mean? Like, it's probably not going to do them much good likewise. You know, I just wonder, is there an extra place there? It does give Leinster an extra advantage over Munster, but, you know, it's just
bring
the way it
Kerry
is.
Into Munster.
Briefly
on the Leinster final, I was at it. The bad news is...
Or a six team into both competitions,
The bad news, and then you'd eliminate the imbalance of teams getting longer rest periods and such. As is going to happen in the Joe McDonagh Cup final now, or Joe McDonagh Cup competition next year. I was at the Leinster final. Bad news, listeners, is I did not quite bring the analytical eye to it that the Myers brought to the Joe McDonagh Cup. I was sitting near the Sunday game. So it's interesting to see. So they have their little corporate box, and then they go out onto the seats looking onto the pitch during the game, and they've got loads of monitors around them. And a guy, it must be a producer, who's rewinding clips and says, oh, we picked that out, we'll use that. It's just interesting to watch.
Whereabouts on the pitch?
They've just got like a corporate box up in the stands.
Oh, sorry, so they're sitting in the stands, same as everybody else, and then the corporate box.
The studio is the box. But it's just interesting watching Lachnan and Farrell, arms folded, sitting back, enjoying the game. And Shefflin was up, jumping up and down, at the producer, taking notes, always at the screen. It's just an interesting insight into
the two different generations.
Into how Shefflin is being made work there.
Yeah, so Shefflin is looking for the clips to show the different bits of analysis, whereas Lachnan and Farrell are more than happy to just wing it and say that so and so is playing well.
Yeah,
and
Lachnan, bang over Lachnan the bar. Will sit back and just exude, authority maybe. And Cyril then, I assume, is just writing down metaphors in which to mix by the time they come back on.
It was an interesting game though. Like, I mean,
It wasn't the greatest game I've ever been at, but it did take fire in the last 15 minutes.
Missed a lot of it because of obviously driving back to Thurles, so I only saw the highlights, but my God, John Milan was absolutely loving it on the radio. And he was doing it with Brian Carty, and it was clearly not the great, like the best traditional game, I suppose, or you know, exciting game in an open hurling kind of way. And the amount of times Milan said, and I'm paraphrasing here, but this is very close to the exact line, he goes, I love this kind of game, Brian. I love this kind of game. It's not the traditional type of game that people love, but Jesus, I love this kind of game.
It's
he said it, I'd say 10 times.
Andy Daly was the exact same in the Sunday game afterwards.
Yeah, I was about to say that. Andy Daly and Jack Tour were the exact same. They were like ball over... the two key words that we hear so often was intensity and tackling. The two, yeah. They loved it. They absolutely loved that kind of, and it was that kind of game. Like it was kind of a weird game where it was defenders were shining and attackers definitely weren't. And then you start to look back, it gets decided by freeze. So Galway start committing kind of silly fouls and that becomes really costly. And you've got a forward like TJ Reid who ends up putting them away. Just on that, by the way, we had some stats sent to us by Shore, the official statistics partner to the GAA. One of the weird ones is that Galway have averaged conceding 10 frees in their own half throughout this championship. So at the weekend, TJ scored 10 points, 2 from play, 8 frees. That was because they conceded 8 frees in their own half. So when you've got a forward like TJ Reid, if you give away a free in your own half, he's going to score. So if you're to compare that, Kilkenny generally averaged conceding 6 frees. Now at the weekend, there was only 4, but 6 frees within their own half. Of which, if you look at the Pier Stadium game, for example, they conceded 6. Joe converted all 6. And that, it's telling about the way Galway play. Like, for all the kind of hyperbole about intensity and, you know, good tackling, it is borderline a lot. Like, the classic example is what Burke did in Pier Stadium when he nearly took the head off for the penalty. Like, he probably could have been sent off there. You know what I mean? Like, we praise it and we're like, you know, this Galway team putting down a marker and they're not going to be bullied by anyone. But at some extent, you kind of have to curtail that because if they were to continue that average of 10 frees conceded in your own half, that's 10 scores against Kilkenny when somebody's like TJ Reid. Or even you could argue from just beyond that as far as the 65 in. That is their scores you're giving away.
Yeah, I'd often wonder about the consistency of free giving in hurling as well, though. You know,
in terms of refereeing.
There's not a single hurling ref you like.
I don't mind them personally. I don't think that they referee consistently in terms of tackling.
Impossible.
Yeah, no, maybe that's true. So maybe it's nothing to do with the referee. I'm saying the refereeing is not. I'm sure it balances itself out, and it does seem like the fact that the stats that we have there, it wasn't just confined to Croke Park on Sunday. It's a general trend for Galway, which is kind of worrying. Personally, I think the best thing that could have happened to Galway this week was getting caught and not losing.
Yeah.
I think a wake-up call is that we're not as good as everybody's telling us we are. Which is like, seriously, the idea that Galway were being so anointed after coming out of a simple enough Leinster Championship with the home game against Kilkenny being their only real big performance, it was kind of strange. Like, Wexford didn't show up at all against them.
Yeah.
And let's cool the jets here a little bit,
I think that's not unique to Galway. The same thing happened to Tip after they won in Ireland. We were immediately talked into how they were going to do a double. The same thing with this Galway thing. I don't think it's unique to them. I also think there was a bit of weird misinterpretation of, you probably saw this already, but David Burke's comments about fear and Kilkenny. Like, if you look at the quotes, what he said kind of made sense. He wasn't talking about after last year that Kilkenny now fear Galway. He was talking about 2012 when they gave them a rattle, and that now his basic point was that now Kilkenny have to gear up for Galway. Like, there's a consideration that, geez, these could beat us. Like, they, especially, they were now being taken seriously. I think it got really kind of twisted, and it was this idea that now they fear us. I don't think that's what he meant at all. And it kind of got, and maybe, like, I have no doubt actually that Brian Cody deliberately would have twisted those in the dressing room. That's ammunition and motivation going into that game.
It's interesting what you say, Mick, about it possibly being a rocket to Galway. I mean, the fact that they were only a point up in the last couple of minutes wasn't enough of a rocket, because the space that... It was a good equalising score by TJ Reid.
Yeah, it was a great score.
I couldn't believe the amount of space that he had.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because he wasn't originally going to take the shot, and then he realised, oh, wait a minute, I can just tap this over.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Too much space for such a big point of the game. I would say, though, it is hard to change an attitude and mindset and set up in the middle of a game. If they kind of... And we're talking about very, very small percentages here, you know, because, like, Galway didn't play badly. Like, they had an off day by their standards, but I wouldn't say it was because they weren't preparing or they thought they had the game won in advance or anything like that. It's more that I think just on a psychological level below the surface, they probably just need to know that they're not as good as they think, as they're being told they are. You know, they need to know that instead of just trying to tell themselves that. I think they could win next week by 3 or 4 points.
Yeah. I agree, yeah. Just another explainer from Shore on what happened with Galway. Their shot efficiency is normally 59%, which kind of makes sense given the forwards they have. At the weekend, it was only 50%, and you could kind of see that, like, their shot selection was kind of... And that, like, I think sometimes this can come down and be a weird one. It's like, you're shooting, you weren't accurate, therefore, so 50% success rate, therefore your shooting is poor. I don't think that's what it was. I think it was actually where, you know, their shot selection, like shooting with a man breathing down your neck as opposed to maybe recycling the ball. And then on the other side of that, you've got examples where they were passing the ball when the score was on, like Joe Canning trying to square the ball across the box when he got intercepted there. Just put it over, like the score is on, or when he had advantage and he went for goal. Mm. Just put it over. Like, if the score is on, just put it over and you keep the score with it going over, especially when it's not going your way.
There's the Galway man, and I had to clarify that it was Joe Canning. You know, he doesn't want to sound like too much of a homer, you know.
I've written before that the GAA is a load of compromises devolved to a kind of a delicate absurdity that we don't always consider. But obviously the Leinster hurling final replay this Sunday is taking place between the Leinster team and a Connacht team in Munster. So sorry, Ulster, for leaving you out on that one. It is taking place in Thurles. We hope that the pitch is looking a little bit better than it did on Sunday.
I don't see how it could. There's going to be no extra water. And it was like that for the football game a couple of weeks ago. Because yeah. I was on the pitch. Again, sometimes going out onto the pitch is the best way to meet your friends and family at a game when you don't go to the pub beforehand. I went out onto the pitch after Clare beat Tip, and I remember commenting on this podcast about how beautiful it was. It was just like so green, like a carpet, not a blemish on it after 70 minutes hurling. And then I see it on the TV 2 weeks later for the Mayo Tip game, and it's like brown. And it was even worse this week. I'd say it's only going to get... I still think the playing surface is fine. I think it's a visual thing more than anything.
Is it?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So you're not taking any excuses for Clare's defeat then?
No, I'm not at all. I was like, you know, in the moment, I'm definitely... like obviously blaming the ref for every free and yeah. No, but as I said to Morris yesterday, the best judgment of whether I actually blame the ref or not is after the game, when you're walking back into town and you're depressed, whether you're still thinking about the ref or whether you're thinking, how did we lose it? And it was definitely the latter this time. So, you know, there might have been a few decisions here and there, but it went both ways. Not an issue. No excuse. Cork are actually the story here. Like, yeah. I'm a Clare fan, and I'll talk about how I never want to see the blood and bandage, as they call it, in front of it ever again, because we won the All-Ireland against them, and it's just a lifetime of pain before and after. Sorry, I actually have, speaking of statistics, this is not with thanks to Shore, official statistics partner to the GEA, but just with thanks to me having a quick look at the stats, because it's driving me mad. In 1914, Clare beat Cork in the Munster final. It was their last Munster title for 63 years until 1995. In the meantime, they have played Cork 9 Munster finals: 1915, 1927, 1972, 1977, 1978, 1986, 1999, 2017, 2018. And they've lost every single one of them. Huh. And
why?
Why? Well, that's what I was going to say. It's not even like last year, Cork won well, you would think. I think back of that match and I think of Tony Kelly winning puck outs and snapshotting them wide. Clare had so many wides that day. You think that they were 8 points up the last day, last Sunday before Cork got 1-1 just before halftime. They killed us, you know. In 1999, Clare were going for 3 Munsters in a row. David Ford missed a 21-yard free late in the game to put us a point up, and Cork ended up going out to score the other end. You know, 77-78, Clare won the league both those years and came up against this great Cork team that they could have won. It was like it was second best team in the country kind of thing, like the way Mick O'Dwyer used to patronize Cork, you know. But that was Clare's great team before their great team, you know. Mm. And it's just this horrible, horrible, horrible feeling of inferiority that you have a little bit in Clare, whereas like Cork don't take Clare seriously. They don't think that Clare are ever going to beat them, you know. And now what they had is we beat them in the bloody All-Ireland final replay, which makes it that little bit extra FU kind of thing to it, you know. Mm. And it's just... the 2005 All-Ireland semi-final, my worst ever day as a sports fan, like just this horrible thing where Cork scored 6 points, Clare were winning by 5, and Cork scored 6 points in a row in the last 5 minutes of the game and won by a point. So it's just, oh god, I can't stand Cork. The story of the day though was Cork made so many changes, positional, tactical, everything changed at halftime, and wiped the floor with Clare for 20 minutes, and that was enough. And they were brilliant. It was the best performance in the year of the year so far.
Yeah, I wanted to,
by far.
I think it's maybe a weird point to bring up on a so-called weekend contest. I think Cork are legitimate All-Ireland contenders now. right up there with Galway. Like, throughout,
were they not considered it beforehand? But I have to say, I think they were
kind of shoehorned into a bracket slightly below Galway. Yeah. I actually think below Tip at the start of the year as well.
Kingston left and John Myler came in, and I think everybody wished John Myler well, but I don't know if we were sure that after being around for so long that he would still have the kind of tactical nous to kind of bring Cork to an All-Ireland. And then they had a poor league, or a mediocre league. Mm. So then you're sort of looking, and I think they were forgotten about.
And it's
they really were, and they've been brilliant.
Like. It's, yeah, and it's his team. Like, that's the main thing. Like, Fitzgibbon and Cooper, the partnership in the midfield, that could be the best midfields in the country at the minute. Spillane coming on to John Conlon totally took him out of the game. The other half of the pitch, they've this weird thing where Hannity and Horgan kind of start in there, and then Hannity comes out to half forward, and they kind of rotate who goes in alongside Horgan. Like, the kind of small, like Mick touched on it there, the really small, minute changes that he makes, and some of them are in game, are so kind of clever. Like, that's what the find this year is a team that, like Kilkenny against Wexford, who have a plan B when things aren't, like, Galway didn't really, they stuck to what they know and end up getting a draw, and that was fine. But it's a team that, when things aren't going well, are going to change. And that's why you can never write off Kilkenny, because we thought it was going to be, you know, the old guard was going to save them this year. Then they took him off at halftime against Wexford, and it was the introduction of young players like Richie Dahi who changed that game. And it's those kind of, like, you touch at halftime, like Spillane actually swapped on to kind of just before halftime, I think, because he cleared the last ball in. It's those kind of really small changes, in-game changes, that I think are going to be crucial this year.
Something I don't know if it came across on TV was, so Clare up by 8 points. Game playing brilliant. Like, by the way, like I actually am on two down on Clare, because for about 50 of the 70 minutes, or maybe 40 of the 70 minutes, they played brilliant hurling, and 30 of those, unfortunately, were in the first half, you know. And it went 8 points up, conceded that goal, was a killer right before halftime. Then I think Mark Holman's sideline cut over the bar, and you're just like, fuck it, it's down to 4 points now. Like, so halftime whistle goes. Clare come out, they're on the pitch, I would say, for 8 minutes. No Cork. Like, I mean, it's getting to the stage now where people are jeering, telling the referee to throw the bloody ball in. He'd blown the whistle so many times. Cork were so late coming out, and then they came out and blitzed. You know, I think they were 1-5 to a point up in the second half at one stage. You know, and you're just thinking, how did this happen? Like, and that's Myler. You know, that has to be, or it's leaders within the pitch or whatever. They weren't going back out there until, one, they were ready to themselves, and two, they had Clare getting cold, pucking around the pitch, you know?
Yeah, walking around doing Marty it. He just said as a throwaway comment that he reckoned it was 20 minutes, the break half time, before Cork came back out.
Yeah, maybe 21 actually, yeah, because I actually just checked it. But Clare were out there for, I'd say, 6 minutes.
Yeah, I do have some good news for you.
Oh?
Clare always win All Ireland when it's hot in the summer.
Yeah, I said that to a lot of people before the game. I didn't say it to as many after.
It's still on. 2013, long hot summer is in 95
was the hot summer everybody remembers. I'm not sure how great 97 was.
What did I say? 98.
Yeah,
I've got my ears wrong.
Awfully won 98. Don't talk to me about that either. It's a hard enough week for me as it is, Gavin.
Let's look ahead to this weekend's games. We guess the spreads.
Oh God, we're not finished yet.
Oh, sorry, yeah. We'll be quick. So there are 4 football qualifiers, 2 preliminary quarterfinals in the hurling, and obviously the replay of the Leinster final. We're going to start with the football. Roscommon against Armagh. Since Mick is in such a rush to get out of here, he'll get first pick.
Where's this game been played? I can't remember.
Oh, this is a neutral venue. Which one is it? Hold on.
Okay, so this is the match that's on RTÉ News Now.
It's been
bumped off the main TV for the World Cup and the Irish Open.
I hope. Well, I mean, the last time I watched
Wimbledon
RTÉ
on as well. So would you be bothered watching Roscommon at Armagh at all?
RTÉ News Now showed Spain Morocco. Oh, I watched it and it froze about halfway into the first half. Then it just cut to the news. Jerry Canning was doing it from a studio at RTÉ and then had to come back. And he said, oh, sorry about that. And obviously couldn't describe anything that just happened.
So I'm pretty sure this is in like Tullamore or somewhere, because I heard it's
Port Leash or Nab, and I can't remember which one.
Yeah. Anyway, I think I think Armagh, as you mentioned, that qualifier record will come into it. I think Armagh have a bit of brand name as well about them. So I think it'll be closer than it probably should. And I'll say Roscommon -1.
-2.
1-0 to Morris. Roscommon -2 is bang on.
Oh, wasn't that far off.
Next up, Tyrone and Cork.
By the way, me and Mara, there's only been 2 weeks of this, and me and Mara have won both of them against Mark.
Yeah, that's
Mark,
what I was going to ask.
This is very much a final.
Tyrone against Cork, Mara gets first pick.
Tyrone minus four.
Okay, Mick.
Tyrone minus three.
Morris is a flame. It's Tyrone minus four.
He checks these, doesn't he? He's actually got the two of them bang on.
He'll have to deliver.
I know he's knowledgeable, for God's sake.
Kildare against Fermanagh. Mick.
Oh, God, I don't know. Sure, nothing I can say can be better than what Morris is going to get, but I will say it actually should. Fermanagh should be favourites for this game. I wonder, are they? I wonder what way people are looking at it, but. Do you know what? I'm going to say there's no spread in it. I'm going to say it's evens.
No, okay. I'm going to go. I think it's Kildare minus three.
Kildare minus three.
Against Kermana.
Sure, I'm definitely closer here.
Kildare minus three.
What? He's cheating.
I promise. I honestly haven't thought.
This is an incredible run.
But that was incredible.
How is it Kildare minus three? Lads?
Because Kildare won last weekend and everybody forgets about Fermanagh.
They also lost to Carlow.
Kildare were Division 1 team and Fermanagh Division 3.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's a fair point, actually.
Although I'm with you, I think Fermanagh
will win. Fermanagh beat Monaghan, though, you know?
The problem is
I'd bet Monaghan against Kildare 8 out of 10 times.
The problem is that Fermanagh are going to line up like Carlow did, and we know what happened to Kildare when they played against Carlow. They're so naive. Yeah. But I still think...
oh, my God.
Well, you're only guessing the spread as opposed to guessing the result here. Sorry. So you've done better than I have. So
is this over now? No, it's not quite yet.
No, we've still got
four games to go. Yeah, but you're 3-0 down, Mick. Monaghan against Laois. Morris is first up.
Monaghan minus four?
I'll go minus five. It's minus four, isn't it?
It's minus six. Oh, is it?
Oh, geez, minus six was my original thought, actually, I have to say.
So you're closer, I'll give you the point.
That's generous.
There was no point in me. Yeah, that's generous. Laois, can I say something very strange? And I wasn't on the show last week to talk about it, but I was at the Leinster final. For a team that got beaten by 25 points or whatever it was to Dublin, I was impressed by them. I thought they played well. I thought there was lots of good things. Downey Kingston and as a ball winning full forward was absolutely brilliant. If they're playing against anyone just at a slightly level below, I'd fancy Laois to cause an upset or two. Maybe it's not. Maybe they can't do it against Monaghan. Maybe that's just a level too high. But I think they'll give them a game.
Yeah. So the miracle comeback is still on as we move to hurling. Carlow against Limerick. Carlow have home advantage and Mick gets first pick.
Limerick minus 12.
I think it's bigger. It's 17.
So Limerick minus 14.
I'm closer.
Which means Mick is ever so close here. So Morris now has this.
Get any bonus points for getting it exact either. So
so it is 3-2 with two picks left. Morris has done a pretty good job now of covering up his tracks and the fact that he's checked this beforehand.
So he knows he only needs one more point, so he can just wait for the Leinster final.
I do like the drawing it out in misery. Where are we? Westmeath against Wexford in that other preliminary quarter final. Morris gets first pick.
Wexford minus 14.
Mick.
Oh, 14 was going to be what I said. I'll say 15 then.
Wexford minus 12.
No.
Morris steals it. 4-2.
Why have Wexford got less points than Limerick? Wexford more defensive, maybe. Okay, so I have no chance now. Is there not Leinster final replay in Thurles bonus points at stake here?
Okay, yeah. Well, let's put it all.
If I get this exact, I get 12 points. And okay. Win the week.
Go against Kilkenny. Mickey get first pick. This to steal.
Oh, this
an
is
incredibly
close, actually,
undeserved victory.
Galway minus one.
Morris,
it's bigger.
That's winning by 2 points, though.
I think it's the same as last week. And last week it was, I can say Galway minus four.
The answer is Galway minus three. Morris gets that point just for the heck of it. 5-2 to Morris.
5-2
for him. We're way over time, guys. Thank you very much. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Reminder to subscribe to the podcast and rate it and comment and tell your friends. Do all those things that people do with podcasts, including listen to it. It'll make us all feel much better about ourselves. Thank you once again to Morris and to Mick and to you for listening. Until next week, take it easy.
Bye, folks.